Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today's show features Seth's conversation with U.S. Congressman Adam Schiff of California, who also sticks around for a few more questions backstage at Studio 8G. But first, a closer look.
Donald Trump's presidency was already in a tailspin before today's bombshell news that the special counsel has impaneled a grand jury in the Russia investigation. And on top of that, Trump's embarrassing phone calls with leaders in Mexico and Australia were leaked. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. As we saw throughout the campaign, Donald Trump's political career has been declared dead many times. So it's important not to get ahead of ourselves. But still, judging from the newest poll numbers, his presidency sure seems like it's in crisis.
61% of those polled disapprove of the job President Trump is doing. 62% of the American people say President Trump is not honest. In addition, 71% of voters say President Trump is not level-headed. And then there's this. A majority of the American people, 54%, say that they are embarrassed to have Donald Trump as their president.
Those sound less like poll numbers and more like your wife yelling at you after you got too drunk at a party. I married you because I thought you were level-headed, but you embarrassed me tonight, Michael. I came home 54% embarrassed. So it looks like Trump has hit rock bottom, but hey, at least there's nowhere to go but up, right?
Breaking news, NBC News confirms Robert Mueller has impaneled a grand jury in Washington to investigate Russia's interference in the 2016 election.
Although Trump's probably excited because he thinks a grand jury is just a fancier jury. So beautiful. Not like one of those dump juries. Beautiful gold 12 chandeliers. Now, as we know, when things aren't going well for Trump, he tends to retreat further into his alternate reality, a reality where he is beloved by all. And the country is faring better than ever before. For example, after the Boy Scouts distanced themselves from Trump due to an outcry over his highly partisan speech, Trump, out of nowhere, insisted to the Wall Street Journal that his speech was an unequivocal success. He told the paper, "I got a call from the head of the Boy Scouts saying it was the greatest speech that was ever made to them." Okay, first of all, that speech wasn't made to them. It was made at them. Donald Trump basically held a group of Boy Scouts hostage. In the movie version, The Rock has to parachute in to save them. Second, when they were asked for details about that alleged phone call with Trump, the Boy Scouts told the Associated Press, "We're unaware of any such call." That's right, the president lied about getting a phone call from the Boy Scouts. I'm also starting to think his merit badge for best at all the things isn't real either. White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders tried to clarify the discrepancy yesterday, but reporters were not buying it.
In terms of the Boy Scouts, multiple members of the Boy Scout leadership following his speech there that day congratulated him, praised him. They were direct conversations, not actual phone calls.
So he lied. He didn't receive that.
I wouldn't say it was a lie.
It was just a little white lie from a big white liar. And then there's Trump's repeated Then there's Trump's repeated insistence that the economy, which he claimed was stagnant under President Obama, is suddenly roaring now that he's president. For example, GDP rose by 2.6% in the second quarter, and Trump celebrated that as an unprecedented success.
We have GDP on Friday. 2.6 is a number that nobody thought they'd see for a long period of time, and 2.6 is an unbelievable number.
Trump talks about numbers like he just got called up to the front of the class to solve a math problem. Johnny, what's 2.6 times 17?
So you see over here 2.6, and don't get me started on 2.6. What an unbelievable number. You've got a 2 and you've got a 6. They're separated by a dot, and oh boy, what a dot this dot is right here. And I'd love to finish, but may I have the bathroom pass?
In fact, not only is 2.6 not an unbelievable number, in the third quarter of 2016, when Obama was still president, growth was actually higher at 2.9%, a point made emphatically yesterday by MSNBC.
We need to put this to rest. He's been saying this all the time, and if anybody who has anything to do with President Trump is watching this, please send him this message. This 2.6% economic growth, it is for one quarter. You can spike growth for a quarter all sorts of times. In fact, do you know how many times during President Obama's 8 years growth was 2.6% or higher? 14 quarters. 14 quarters.
One more time. Say it again.
14 times during President Obama's administration.
I like that MSNBC anchors are now acting as hype men for one another. One more time. Say it again. Soon they're going to start taking their lapel mics off and dropping them. MSNBC, see ya! And then yesterday we saw another feature of Trump's alternate reality, the idea that immigrants are pouring into our country and hurting our economy. Yesterday, Trump proposed new legislation cutting legal immigration by half and imposing new language requirements on immigrants before they come here. Naturally, this policy was highly controversial, which meant it was time to bring back a Trump spokesman we haven't seen in a while. That's right. I'm talking about Stephen Miller. That's right. Stephen Miller is back from the dead, though from the looks of him, only partway back. And he took to the podium and immediately started fighting with the press.
Can you tell me how many...
We'll make a carve-out in the bill that says the New York Times can hire all the low-skilled, less-paid workers they want from other countries and see how you feel then about low-wage substitution.
The Statue of Liberty says, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free.
The poem that you're referring to that was added later is not actually part of the original Statue of Liberty.
Man, I'm surprised to hear that kind of disdain for a statue from a guy who looks that much like a church gargoyle. But he wasn't done bringing the charm. Please continue, Stephen Miller.
It reveals your cosmopolitan bias to a shocking degree that in your mind... No, this is an amazing moment. But that's not what you said. And it shows your cosmopolitan bias.
You're trying to engineer the racial and ethnic flow of people into this country.
Jim, that is one of the most outrageous, insulting, ignorant, and foolish things you've ever said.
Man. Is there anyone more off-putting than Stephen Miller? He looks like a mortician's ghost. He looks like the guy in a prison movie who's in for eating his family. I miss Mother. She was delicious. He looks like the hitchhiker other hitchhikers stay away from. His catchphrase is, I didn't mean to startle you. Stephen Miller knows what you did last summer. And by the way, the idea of cutting back on visas and slashing legal immigration in half was not well received by Congress either. GOP Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina had this to say.
South Carolina's economy, the number one is agriculture, number two is tourism. So my farmers, my hotel owners, my restaurant owners have a hard time finding labor. It's not that Americans are lazy, but these are jobs are just hard to fill. And when you can't find an American worker, you can get a legal visa, it's a win-win. You take that and cut it in half, it will destroy South Carolina's economy. Other than that, it's a good idea.
Just a warning, be careful with that sarcasm, Senator, because sarcasm will be lost on Trump. He will just hear the compliment. Did you hear? Lindsey said it was a good idea. And it wasn't in the least bit sassy. Now, if it seems to you like Trump is cynically playing to his base with these moves, you're not the only one. Today, the Washington Post released transcripts of Donald Trump's January call with the president of Mexico, and they illustrated the depths of his cynicism. One thing that became clear quickly in the call was that Trump seems to admit that his signature campaign pledge to get Mexico to pay for the wall was just an empty political ploy. And General Trump really wanted to hammer home it would be best for him if the Mexican president would stop saying that Mexico was not going to pay for the wall, saying, among other things, "So what I would like to recommend is if we're going to have continued dialogue, we will work out the wall. They are going to say, who is going to pay for the wall, Mr. President, to both of us? And we should both say, we will work it out. It will work out in the formula somehow." As opposed to you saying, "We will not pay," and me saying, "We will not pay." He's like a guy talking to his friend on their way home from a bachelor party. "We cannot say we went to a strip club. Your wife will ask, and my wife will ask, and it's best if we just say we had some steak and we went to bed early. But this only works if we both do it." Trump at one point tried to connect with the Mexican president by talking about his election victory, but again, it was very unclear what he was trying to say. Talking about himself in the third person, he said in Ohio, they are having rallies for Trump right now because Trump has taken a hard stance on Mexico. Some of these states have not been won in 38 years by a Republican, and I won them very easily, so they are dancing in the streets. You probably have the same thing where they are dancing in your street also, but in reverse. What? In reverse, so they dance backwards? Like the moonwalk? Trump sounds like he learned his facts about other countries from a children's book. "Do you know that in Mexico they dance backwards? They walk on their hands and they wear shoes on their heads." But more offensive than anything Trump said about Mexico is what he said about America. When discussing drugs coming in from Mexico, Trump said, "I won New Hampshire because New Hampshire is a drug-infested den." Now, I'm from New Hampshire, and as we discussed last week, New Hampshire has been hit hard by the opioid crisis, but still, don't call it a drug-infested den. It's New England. It's a drug-infested inn. But this truly is Trump at his worst. He's openly talking about how he benefited politically from a very real epidemic. He took office and immediately tried to dismantle a healthcare program that provides treatment for that epidemic. And the person he put in charge of handling the opioid epidemic is Chris Christie, who was last seen in Milwaukee having a Mexican standoff with a Cubs fan over a plate of nachos. And the nachos lost. But it gets worse because the Washington Post also obtained a transcript of Trump's tense phone call with the Prime Minister of Australia. And immigration came up on that call as well because Trump was angry about a pre-existing agreement from the Obama administration to resettle about 1,250 refugees from Australian detention centers. Trump tried to explain his concerns about the refugees Australia was sending, but it didn't really make any sense. "I hate taking these people," Trump said. "I guarantee you they are bad. That is why they are in prison right now. They are not going to be wonderful people who go on to work for the local milk people," an apparent reference to U.S. dairy farms. Clearly, this is a man who has never been in a grocery store.
This is delicious. Send my best to the local milk people.
So Trump's presidency is in crisis with record low poll numbers, a rapidly escalating Russia scandal, draconian immigration policies, and lies about the economy and the Boy Scouts. Senator Graham?
Other than that, it's a good idea.
Give me a closer look.
Hey, I'm Amber Ruffin.
And I'm Jenny Hagel. Thank you so much for listening to the Late Night with Seth Meyers podcast.
But just one more thing. If you could, please subscribe and rate our podcast.
And review it.
And review it. And then call us and tell us you like us in person. Thank you so much.
Our guest is a congressman from California and the ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee. Please welcome to the show Congressman Adam Schiff, everybody. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm excited.
This is a great night to have you, I don't know. I don't know if there are great nights anymore, but you obviously have been, you're on the House Intelligence Committee, you've been dealing a lot with the Russia investigation, so I'm happy you're here, but I don't think Donald Trump is. He tweeted about you recently, and right here we see sleazy Adam Schiff, the totally biased congressman looking into Russia, spends all of his time on television, so he's got you there. Pushing the Dem loss excuse. So when you first saw that from the president of the United States, how'd you feel?
Well, I was getting on the plane to fly to Washington, and my phone lit up with messages, the president just called you a sleaze. And my reaction was, I've been slimed.
Yeah.
Like a character on Ghostbusters.
You did.
But my second reaction was, he really should have talked to my friends from grade school.
Yeah.
With a name like Schiff, they did much better than he did.
Yeah.
There were a lot of material to work
yeah,
with.
Yeah, he usually does a really good job with his, like, disparaging nicknames, but I feel like he dropped the ball.
It was a missed opportunity.
I feel like you're making him so angry that you're blinding his ability to really dig in.
This is true.
So I want to talk about the Wall Street Journal reported tonight that Special Counsel Mueller has opened up a grand jury. Now, you have a different investigation. You're the House Intelligence Committee's investigation. There's a Senate Judiciary Committee. There's a Senate Intelligence Committee. The grand jury is separate, but what does this tell you as somebody with your legal background that he has opened up a grand jury?
Well, his responsibility is really different than all of ours in Congress because we're looking at the whole range of what Russia did, their active measures campaign, what tactics they employed. He's looking at a very specific task, and that is, were U.S. laws violated, and if so, who should be prosecuted? And the fact that he has now apparently or reportedly gone to a grand jury means he now needs the power of compulsion to get documents, to compel witnesses to testify. That is a necessary step to move forward to a potential prosecution. Doesn't mean that he will prosecute, but this is part of the investigation very much moving forward.
And another report said that he's sort of moving into the financial element of this. Donald Trump had said recently, in speaking about Special Counsel Mueller, that that was sort of a red line for him. Why do you think it is that Donald Trump is so worried about the financial part of this investigation?
Well, I can tell you why I'm so concerned about it, and that is when people think about kompromat, what the Russians call compromising material, they tend to think about the dossier potentially...
Yeah.
Salacious videos.
It's all I think about.
But
I wish you hadn't brought it up.
The far more compromising material would be if the Russians were engaged, as they do in other places like Europe, in illicit financial transactions and money laundering or something like that with the Trump organization. Then they would have very powerful compromising material they could hold over his head, and it could affect U.S. policy. So if Bob Mueller is looking into this, you know, it's really quite necessary to make sure that our policy is based on U.S. national security interests, not the personal exposure of the president of the United States. And obviously, this deeply worries the president. Now, whether that says something about his financial dealings in the past remains to be seen, but plainly, this is what got him once again to talk about possibly removing Mueller.
Now, you know, you were talking about, did the Russians do anything to compromise the Trump administration, Donald Trump personally? And it's interesting because the Russians, you could find in your investigation that the Russians did things, and it turns out that, the Trumps were not aware of this. And Jared Kushner sort of made that argument. It was an leaked audio to congressional interns that we couldn't have colluded with the Russians. He basically said we couldn't even collude with our own campaign. Like, basically making an argument of incompetence. Which isn't a bad argument.
Well, and the speaker has often made the same argument.
Yes.
You know, don't hold the president responsible. He doesn't know what he's doing.
He's new.
He's new.
Yeah.
You know, he's inexperienced. He's not a politician.
Yeah. All things that would have been great to hear on the campaign trail.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I want to ask this as well. I'm imagining that you have a lot of people that see you and see your investigation as some sort of savior for the Democratic Party. Like this, you're going to discover something that's going to push him out of office. And it strikes me that the Democrats are at risk right now, as a party, of putting too much stock in hoping that an investigation brings about the end of the Trump administration, when the focus should be at where you hope administrations end, at the ballot box. Do you think the Democratic Party is doing enough messaging outside of their investigations into the Trump administration as far as, hey, the next time you vote, we actually have a message that is independent of what we think is wrong with the current people in power?
You know, this is, I think, absolutely essential, and that is, yes, we have to go forward with the investigation, and that's very important for the reasons we talked about. But more than that, we need to give voters a powerful positive reason to vote for Democrats, not just all the reasons they don't like Donald Trump, which they know already. And I think the real key to that is addressing the economic concerns that people have, particularly in distressed communities where they look at a small global world, they look at automation replacing a lot of jobs, and they ask, and they have every right to ask, what are you offering us to give us hope that our lives can be better, that our children's lives can be better? They have every right to ask that. We need to have a good answer for them. The Republicans have no answer except you're going to win so much you're going to be tired of winning.
Yeah.
Well, they're not tired of winning.
No.
But we owe them a good answer, too, and we are working on it. It's, I think, not only vital to the Democratic Party, it's vital to the country. If we're going to have a situation where we continue to pass on the next generation a higher quality of life, we're going to have to answer that very difficult but very important economic question.
I look forward to seeing, hearing what those answers are from the party. Last thing, every day, I'm paying attention to stuff every day, the part of me that can be shocked, I keep waiting to be numbed, but every day something happens where I go, what? Does that still happening for you?
Every day it happens.
Okay,
to me.
Good.
All
right. It's nice to see you're not jaded.
I like to say I'm running out of adjectives and expletives.
Yeah, well, there you go. That we have to start, yeah, we have to find more of those for this. Thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Congressman Adam Schiff, everybody.
Hey, everybody, this is Henry. I'm here with Congressman Adam Schiff. First of all, I'll say it again. We are so lucky to have you on a day like today, on a day of just incredible breaking news. I wanted to say, so you've kind of become a household name in like maybe political households over the past few months. You have an incredible story about people thinking they knew your name, but maybe that was somebody else.
Oh, yes. Well, when I first got involved in this, the show Law & Order became very popular. And I would knock on people's doors when I was out precinct walking. They'd be like, Adam Schiff, I know that name. And, of course, I knew they knew it from Law & Order.
Of course,
but,
yeah.
You know, I was not going to say anything. And I think the actor Stephen Hill basically got me elected.
Very lucky. People do know you now because you're on TV a lot. You're talking about this investigation. It's a very high-profile position. What interactions are you having with people when you are out in public?
Well, it's been, you know, quite overwhelmingly positive, although, mm-hmm. you know, I do have an occasional person. Like when I was first came up to New York a few weeks ago, I stepped off the platform at Penn Station. Uh-huh. I walked about 5 feet and someone stopped me and said, are you Adam Schiff? I just want to shake your hand. You're my hero, which I enjoyed for a very short second. Mm-hmm. And then the next New Yorker came up to me and said, well, you are not my hero. Why are you eavesdropping on our conversations and leaking them to the press? And I thought, wow, this is what it's like to be a New York member of Congress.
Yeah, that's right.
People are not shy here.
That's right. So in your role in the House Intelligence Committee, you're not just investigating Trump and Russia. There are many other issues you are working on. I wanted to ask about North Korea. Can you talk a little bit about how grave the threat is and if you have confidence in how Trump and his team is addressing it so far?
It's a very serious threat, and you know, I think it's very likely during this president's term in office that the North Koreans are going to be able to marry the miniaturized nuclear technology with an intercontinental ballistic missile and be able to deliver that potentially to the United States. So that obviously is a deep threat, deep
yeah.
concern to us. There are no easy answers. I think what we do need to do is we need to put a lot more pressure on China mm-hmm. By, you know, in a non-public, very matter-of-fact way saying, look, these are the steps we're going to have to take if you can't get your client basically to curtail its program. We're going to have to impose secondary sanctions, meaning we'll have to sanction banks that are doing business with North Korea, which are a lot of Chinese banks. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to expand theater missile defense, not only in South Korea, but in Japan. We're going to have to increase our naval presence in the region. All of these things China doesn't want to see happen.
Yeah.
That may move them to crack down on North Korea. Sending out a bunch of errant tweets, an armada of tweets, as people say, is not likely to move China.
Yeah.
So I don't have a lot of confidence in the president.
Right.
There are some good people around him. Mm-hmm. But right now they're speaking with completely mixed messages. You have Rex Tillerson saying, we want to sit down and talk. And you have others in the administration saying, basically, we're sending in the armada.
How dangerous is the president's Twitter habit in terms of him pontificating about different international matters?
It's incredibly counterproductive. It can be very dangerous. Certainly, if he sends a message that's misinterpreted by North Korea, it could provoke conflict. But we see even in the cases of our Gulf allies and the dispute between Saudi Arabia, UAE, and Qatar right now, that while the Secretary of State is trying to defuse this fight among our allies, you have the president inflaming it, saying Saudi Arabia is doing the right thing and Qatar needs to stop funding terrorism. And so there is no coherent message coming from the administration, and that weakens our power.
Right. I also wanted to ask you about an international story that broke this morning, and I was saying earlier, it feels like that story broke in like 2006 at this point because of how crazy today was. So there's this report that, or these leaked transcripts of the president's calls with, I believe, the head of Australia and Mexico. What was your reaction to that? And as someone who works in intelligence, do you want those transcripts out in the public eye? Of course, the content was pretty shocking.
Well, no. I mean, these kind of conversations shouldn't be published the way they have been. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it's embarrassing. It's counterproductive. It's inimical to our interests to have the president talk the way he is. And, you know, in one of the reports, it talked about how the president said, I think it was when he was talking with the Australian prime minister, God, the only good call I've had lately is with Putin. So he can't talk with the Mexican president without offending him. He can't talk with our Australian allies among our closest friends without offending them. The only one he seems to be able to speak well with and of is Putin and Russia.
Yeah. Well, on that note, let me ask you about another story that broke, another thing that broke this morning, which also feels like deep ancient history. The president signed this bipartisan sanctions bill for Russia's meddling in the election. And then he went on Twitter this morning, I believe it was this morning, and criticized Congress, not Russia. I mean, as a member of Congress, I mean, how kind of shocking is that to see?
Well, you know, it's really appalling. He basically is blaming Congress for poor relations with Russia instead of Russia, which invaded its neighbor and invaded our own democracy. And that's what made Russia the subject of sanctions, the fact that we can't trust the president and that we had to basically take away his discretion to remove the sanctions is kind of a sad fact that says more about the president than about the Congress. But that he would now join the so-called Blame America First crowd. I mean, he was among those that were always castigating those criticizing America. Well, he now takes Russia's side over the U.S.
Yeah, it's stunning. Well, thank you for being here, and thank you for doing the work you're doing. Keep it up.
Thank you very much. Whoa, such a treat. I'm a big fan, and it
more
was
fun
a,
than
really a thrill to be absolutely.
Good.
This has been more fun than C-SPAN.
Also, we can see you and hear you a little better, as we all know, watching the healthcare vote last week. It was a little difficult. Well, thank you so much. That was
pleasure.
Great.
Thanks.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.